أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد رسول الله.
السلام عليكم. This is the interview. Welcome to another episode of Islam in Focus. I'm your host, Hamid Rashid. Today we have our eighth program in our discussion of the Quran and modern sciences. We'll be continuing with our second program discussing the topic of human reproduction. I have joining me on the program, as usual, Dr. Jamal Badawi of St. Mary's University. Brother Jamal, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
I wonder if I could have you very quickly summarize the main points we touched on in our first program dealing with the topic of human reproduction, very interesting program.
I hope so. Well, in the first part of the program, we just continued the discussion of the carryover from the previous program dealing with animal kingdom and dependence of birds on what the Quran refers to as the divine order, as we explained the kind of programming in the nervous cells in the of birds, especially migratory birds.
Mm-hmm.
There were also some brief discussion of the formation of milk in the animal body and how the Quran referred to that as something coming from the injunction of the intestine and the blood, and we analyzed that from the physiological standpoint, and that was definitely not known at the time of the revelation of the Quran. Then we started the discussion of what you refer to again, the human reproduction. And the most striking thing is that not only does the Quran not mention any of the erroneous myths that existed at the time of its revelation, or even for hundreds of years later, but it made mention of something that was discovered relatively recently, more than 1,000 years after the revelation of the Quran. So we discussed some of the background in terms of those myths, some of which continued until the 17th, 18th, and even 19th century. And the Quran in the 7th century of the Common Era had made reference, for example, to the human being created out of the liquid that comes between the spinal column and the ribs. And we analyzed that again in terms of the formation of the ovaries and the testicle and the initial stages of development and how they continue throughout their lives, getting their nerve and blood supply exactly from that area or that region between the spinal column and the ribs.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you just mentioned in our last program, we talked about the early stages of development of the reproductive organs.
Mm-hmm.
How about their nature and their functions? What does the Quran say about that, and how does modern science help us to understand what the Quran says with respect to the...
Okay, when the Quran speaks about the reproductive organs, and let's say start with the female,
mm-hmm.
we find that the word rahim and its derivatives is repeated frequently in the Quran. That is translated as womb.
Mm-hmm.
But womb is not just mentioned in the Quran as a physiological phenomena or some organ. It's mentioned in a number of ways. First, it is mentioned as a symbol of motherhood, a symbol of the blood relationship, and as such, a cause for respect and reverence. One of the most fascinating citations in the Quran is the first passage in the 4th surah,
mm-hmm.
called An-Nisa, or women. يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمُ الَّذِي خَلَقَكُم مِّن نَّفْسٍ وَاحِدَةٍ. The translation of meaning of that passage say, O humankind, that is Allah addressing mankind, O humankind, revere your guardian Lord who created you from a single soul, or single person, some translated single pair of male and female. Created of like nature, its mate, and from them he scattered, that is like seeds, multitudes of men and women. Reverence Allah, through whom you demand your mutual rights, and notice this, and reverence the wombs,
mm-hmm.
that is, that bore you, for Allah ever watches over you. This reverence and respect of motherhood, as represented by this symbol of womb, it actually extends to people even whose relationship is based on this womb, a commonality of that womb, like brothers, sisters, and other relatives. As far as mentioning something about the womb as a reproductive organ, One thing that really attracts the attention in the Quran is passage 8 in Surah 13. Allah يعلم ما تحمل كل أنثى وما تغيض الأرحام وما تزداد. That is, Allah knows what every female bears, by how much the wombs decrease or increase. I'll come to this. Everything is before His sight in due proportion. Now, one observation about the translation. The original Arabic words that describe the changes in the womb, تغيض وتزداد, according to Hassanin Makhlouf in a dictionary of the terms of the Quran, says تغيض means decrease or drop. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the opposite of that is increase. And now, in the translation I chose for that passage, I translated that as increase and decrease. This is not necessarily a translation that every translator uses, but I think this, to me, reflects more closely the original Arabic words in the verse or this passage. The first thing that comes to mind when we talk about the increase and decrease of the womb, as we see in this illustration, is during the period of pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
This is an illustration of a womb of a pregnant mother. The strange thing about it is that why did the Quran specifically point it out to that organ, the uterus, to refer to the increase and decrease in size? Well, there are lots of parts in our body also that increase and decrease. But it was found that only the uterus, among all organs, is capable of a very phenomenal increase in its weight. For example, the uterus weighs about 50 grams, that is before pregnancy. Towards the end of pregnancy, it weighs as much as 1,000 grams. Well, that's 20 times the original weight. Furthermore, the womb also would be carrying, towards the end of pregnancy also, nearly 5,000 grams, almost like 5 kilos. About 3,500 grams is the average weight of the baby. About 1,000 grams, the amniotic fluid, and 500 grams, the placenta. This is as much as it relates to the increase and decrease of the uterus because of pregnancy. However, it would appear to me that that passage in the Quran refers not only to pregnancy, but perhaps to other changes in the uterus, which were discovered only recently.
Mm-hmm. Now, the changes in the size of the uterus or the womb due to pregnancy that we've just been discussing, you know, I think is fairly well known.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by the other changes that the Quran seems to be referring to?
Okay, let me start first by the original verse in the Quran so that one would not seem like, you know, trying to give a meaning to it. It says, Allahu ya'lamu ma tahmilu kullu untha. Allah knows what every female bears. If we translate what every female bears as pregnancy, then it would not be totally accurate. Why? Because there are many females who never get pregnant, never get married. And there are females who get married, but they are barren and never have children. So bearing here does not necessarily refer only to bearing children in terms of pregnancy, but it could also be whatever hereditary characteristics or other things that they bear within their body. So the word kullu untha, every female, make it a more general kind of statement. Secondly, if you continue with the same, very same passage in the Quran, and it says Allah also knows what the wombs increase or decrease, which seem to indicate again that the increase and decrease in the uterus or the womb are something which is common to all females. That is something beyond even pregnancy. Now, how does that relate to our understanding now in modern science? The first thing to observe is that during the life of the female, the uterus goes through lots of changes. For example, when the female is just a little child, a little baby, the uterus is very, very tender and very, very thin.
Mm-hmm.
As the girl reaches adolescence, the uterus becomes stronger. It becomes composed of three layers, and then its thickness becomes much greater. And now, after the woman becomes, you know, a full mature woman, and in later time, after the period of menopause, you find that the uterus again begins to become smaller or decline. Here is another illustration of another type of changes in the female uterus. Now, this illustration shows the ups and downs, as you might see. If you start from one end, you notice that the wall of the uterus, if you use just a simple term that everybody can understand, the wall of the uterus, immediately after the cessation of menstruation, is very thin. It's almost about half millimeter. And then as the uterus begins to get ready in case a fertilized ovum comes to it, you notice that there is a gradual increase of thickness in the size or in the thickness of the uterus wall until it reaches a maximum of something like 5 millimeters. So that's almost 10 times as much increase in the thickness of the uterus. And then, of course, if there is no ovum that is available to be fertilized, it again starts declining. That is, the this extra would disintegrate and comes out of the body in the form of dark blood. Now, both of these changes in the uterus, that is, in both cases, as the stages, as related to the stages of development of the female, or the various changes that happens every month, which is common, of course, among the mature females, are things that definitely were not known at the time of the revelation of the Quran and for many, many centuries afterwards. So the word bear here could carry a number of meanings and could refer to different facets that was not known at all.
Mm-hmm. I perhaps we turn now to some discussion or examination of the role of man in reproduction. Mm-hmm. Could you give me some background information on that?
Well, of course, the most important contribution of the man or the husband, let's say, in the process of human reproduction is the contribution of the sperm, because the sperm is the, you know, thing that actually fertilizes the ovum and carries the hereditary characteristics of the father. These sperms are produced in the male testicle. And here's an illustration, a close-up, in fact, of the inside of the testicle. And it shows, if we use a simple term again, a very large number of coiled tubes. It is inside those tubes that the sperms are produced. You would be surprised to know, for example, that the total length of those tubes, if you add it together, comes to something like half kilometer. Yeah, 500 meters. And inside the inner walls of those tubes, if you will, the sperms are formed. The sperms are basically elongated cells with a head and a long tail. That tail helps the sperm in their movement, that is, toward traveling towards the ovum. As far as the size of the sperm is concerned, it's about 5/1,000 of a millimeter. In other words, you can have 200 of them side by side, then that would just make 1 millimeter. Here is another illustration that shows that in every tiny drop of sperm, or semen, as the common term is used, because the sperm actually refers to the actual cells. So in any tiny drop of the semen, there are millions and millions of those sperm. This is only just a very tiny section that shows how they virtually swim or float in this fluid known as the semen. Now, in each or in each time there's an intimate relationship between the husband and wife, the number of sperms ejected is estimated to run between something like 200 to 300 million. And it's amazing to know that only one of them, one of all of these, is the one that would be actually needed to fertilize the ovum. The amazing thing is that the Quran refers to this fluid or the semen and tie it closely with the contribution of the female or the mother. And as we mentioned last time, this is something that is rather amazing in view of the fact that up to the 17th and 18th century, we have seen that many scientists believe that the baby exists in miniature form. Some said in the ovum, some said in the sperm. But the Quran actually makes reference to both of these contributions together, being responsible for the production of the baby.
Could I have you guys clarify a little bit more in terms of what the Quran does say in terms of the contribution of man and how it is connected with woman's contribution?
Okay, the Quran, for example, when it speaks about that liquid that comes from the husband or the father, it describes it in Surah 76, particularly in passage number 2, that it is nutfatin amshajin, that it is, you might call, a mingled or mixed liquid. Now, Dr. Bouquet, the one we referred to before, the author of the Bible, Quran, and Science, described or tried to interpret that particular passage to refer to the semen. That's one interpretation, which is reasonable. And he says that the semen does not only constitute of the sperms. The sperms are just one component, but there are also a number of other secretions, and especially the secretions that are secreted from the Cooper glands and the prostates. So in a sense, you could say that it has lots of fluids or different kinds of components that constitute that fluid. I say it's only a reasonable interpretation, but I don't think it's a complete interpretation. It's not wrong, but it's not complete. Dr. Al-Barr, Muhammad Al-Barr, the one we refer to and the one from whom we borrowed many of this information and illustrations also, very interesting volume. He says that many of the old commentators on the Quran, Mufassirin, interpreted the word mingled in the Quran or amshajin to mean mingling between the contribution of male and female, the father and the mother together. And I think this has some strong basis, because one saying of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, as narrated in Ahmad collection, says that one Jew came to ask Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, how is the child created? And the Prophet answered, "من ماء الرجل وماء المرأة," which means from the, literally from the fluid of the man or father, the fluid of the man and the fluid of the mother, which seemed to indicate a reference to the contribution from the father's side by the sperm, from the mother's side, which is the ovum. And this is something that was not known until the late part of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm. This last point that you just mentioned, I believe, about women's fluid needs some clarification. I think all of us are quite familiar, and often we speak of the man's contribution in the form of the semen.
Mm-hmm.
But what is not clear is this question of the woman's fluid. Can you explain what is meant by that?
Okay. Well, of course, like you said, one can perhaps take the term woman's fluid as a sort of symbol of the ovum. But according to Dr. Baer, it seems to refer to something even deeper than that, something that we understood only recently and after even the development of equipments and means of photographing what happens actually inside the female body, even the case of ovulation as well as fertilization. There are amazing illustrations that we see, mm-hmm. which are actually based on real photographs taken from inside. Now, just to give a brief background of this, every month a small thing which is called follicles, graafian follicles, which is inside the or part of the ovum, of the ovaries of the female, move to the edge of the ovaries. And when it matures, because that follicles actually contains the ovum, it contains also some liquid with it in a cavity which is called the antrum. Now, when that follicle moves to the edge of the ovary and it becomes totally mature, what happens is that it ruptures. And as we see in that illustration, when it ruptures, the ovum is ejected, and the liquid which exists inside the follicle, which is called the liquor folliculi, comes also out with it. Now, Dr. Muhammad Al-Bar described that liquid as a sort of agent that helped in the initial movement of that ovum, because, as you know, the ovum afterwards falls into the fallopian tubes, and there are a number of so-called cilia that start to carry or hold or move that ovum so that it gets inside the fallopian tube, of course, in the expectation or preparation for possible fertilization should a sperm reach the ovum. But the thing that's really interesting that I just mentioned, that maybe for the benefit of specialists who might wish to examine that more, is that in one saying of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he made reference to the color yellow as it relates to woman's contribution. For example, in a hadith narrated in Muslim, he says the man's liquid is white and the woman's liquid is yellow. The question here, which I think some might wish to examine more, especially physicians, is what is the significance of the mention of the color yellow as it relates to ovulation, to the what we know today as the follicles, and the kind of liquid that comes out. This is an interesting area we leave to the specialist to examine.
How and where does the fertilization take place? Can you give us some idea on that?
Well, when the ovum comes out, as we have seen, it goes to the fallopian tube, and it remains there waiting for fertilization. As we see in this illustration, in slide 6, you notice here a very small, tiny thing that stays there. Of course, this is enlarged thousands of times because the fallopian tube is very, very small, so this is really very much enlarged. In fact, the ovum is just about 1/5 of a millimeter, so it's a very tiny thing, really. And there it remains in the fallopian tube waiting. Now, if at that time, or about that time, I should say, the husband unites with his wife or the father and mother, an intimate relationship, then the ejected sperms start to race, literally race, all the way through the uterus to try to reach the ovum in the fallopian tube in order to fertilize it. There is another illustration here in slide 7 that shows that while only a few hundreds, it's in the following slide, number 7, that's the one. It shows here a number of sperms. It might not be that few, but there are a large number of sperms around the ovum, each one actually trying to pierce it and fertilize that ovum. What happened is that only one of those sperms, as we see in the following slide, this is again enlarged thousands of times, and you notice here the sperm, it almost looks like a missile. And grace be to the Creator, it's very strange, because actually it's literally like the missile. The head can be compared to the capsule, which has the most important things. Of course, it has the nucleus and the cell itself that is needed for fertilization. The neck contains material that help convert sugar into energy, and as such help the sperm and its movement. So it's almost like the what you might call today the fuel cylinder in the missile. And with its pointed head, as you see in that illustration, it tries to pierce and get inside the ovum to fertilize it. In the following slide, you notice that This is an actual picture of the sperm after it has already entered with its head inside the ovum. And what you see sticking out is simply the neck and the long tail that help it in its movement. And of course, once you get the head gets inside, that would be the beginning of the fertilization. It is interesting to notice that in the process of fertilization, as Dr. Barr explains it, it's almost like the ovum behaving like a real cherished lady.
Mm-hmm.
The sperm or sperms act also like pursuing males. It's an amazing description, but our analogy.
Yes, indeed. It's very exciting. It's the first time for me to hear such a description, I'm sure, for many of the viewers as well. I wonder if perhaps there's some additional explanation that you could add to.
Okay. Maybe I can refer to Dr. Barron that is a beautiful analogy that he makes there. It might sound romantic, but in any case, I'll just mention what he said and leave it to the audience to assess it. But from the very beginning, it should be noted, first of all, that the sperms, for example, are formed outside of the body. You see, the testicles are outside, and some physicians explain that due to the fact that outside the body, the temperature is 35, whereas inside it's about 37. And this 2 degrees difference are essential to provide the proper atmosphere or proper temperature for the sperms to be produced. By comparison, the ovum is formed deep inside the woman's body, a more cherished and more protected place. Now, when the ovum comes out, as you see in this slide, it comes out almost like a queen. You notice that radiation around it, actually, it's called technically corona radiata, which means like the radiating crown.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes almost like a queen with all this halo around it. It does not just move by itself, as you have seen the liquor folliculi carry it a little bit, or in the initial ejection, and then the cilia and the fallopian tube gently start moving and tenderly taking that ovum inside the tube, just as the bride is carried in the day of her wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have seen the slide where it shows the ovum waiting there inside the fallopian tube for fertilization. By comparison, we have seen again how millions of sperms speed up and race in order to reach, each one of them is hoping to reach the ovum to fertilize it. And even though in the slide where it shows several or so many hundreds, perhaps maybe 400 to 500 sperms around the ovum, she does not just admit anyone. And in fact, many of them die in the process of waiting there. And their death actually makes them one means of facilitating or softening the wall, so that when the chosen sperm comes, is allowed in, whatever Allah decides, whichever sperm comes there, and then once he enters, the door is closed, nobody else is admitted, other sperms die. And you can also say, I don't know whether you can get that metaphorically or scientifically, then the ovum opens her heart to the sperm, and the sperm opens his heart to the ovum. That's not totally romantic description, because that's what happens. If you take the heart of the ovum as the nucleus,
mm-hmm.
and the heart of the sperm as the nucleus also of that cell, then that's exactly what happens. They enter, they mix with each other, the chromosomes get intermingled,
mm-hmm.
and that's what determines the sex of the fetus, and then again, that would be the beginning of the process of division of the cell that eventually results in the human being. So it's an interesting and amazing analogy of the behavior of both cells.
Very indeed, very much so. Very interesting program, Brother Jamal. Thank you very much.
Yes.
We want to thank all of you for watching. Unfortunately, we don't have any more time left on today's program. Join us next week. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.
أشهد أن محمدا